This is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my mother and co-host, Caroline Kilborn.
And good afternoon, everyone. Well, it's cold. Winter has arrived.
Yeah.
We thought, spoiled.
We thought we were going to dodge the snow this year, what do you know?
Well, it's only snowed once.
Yeah, and it was actually a beautiful, beautiful, perfect snowy day.
Yeah, and then the next morning it was all melted off. That was amazing.
I know. And you know, there are places in the world where it works that way, where they get snow and it melts in a day.
Oh, boy.
But not usually Iowa.
No.
But here we are, and we're going to talk about Christmas today.
Yes, we are. We have the wonderful, wonderful children's book. It's North Pole Ninjas.
Mission Christmas.
Yeah.
By Tyler Knott Gregson and Sarah Linden. And let me give you a little background on them. So Sarah is an author, photographer, and mother to two beautiful children. And she lives in Helena, Montana. She's an excellent baker, a horrible cook. And she loves to read her kiddos' books. And her co-author is Tyler Knott Gregson, who is a poet, photographer, artist, and author. He's the author of the nationally best-selling Chasers of the Light, All the Words Are Yours, and, of course, North Pole Ninjas, and an upcoming third book of poetry, Wildly Into the Dark. He also lives in Helena, Montana, along with his two giant golden retrievers, Calvin and Hobbes. That is so cool. And welcome to Writers' Voices, Tyler and Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So how do you two know each other?
Well, we grew up in Helena, Montana, which is a very small little town, at rival high schools. So we actually didn't really meet each other until a few years ago when I hired him to take photos of my kiddos for Christmas gifts. And then we started a photography company together a month later, and the rest is history, I guess.
Wow, that's great. Mm-hmm. And what made you decide to write a children's book?
Well, a few years ago, my kids were being stinkers around the holidays, and I started noticing a trend with them and with all their friends. I want bigger, I want better, I want more. And one night I had kind of had it and decided that something better needed to be done around the holidays. They had a little advent calendar that I would put a little piece of chocolate in every morning. And so one night they received a letter from Santa Claus inviting them to be a part of the North Pole Ninja team, which was kind of a shot in the dark, but I just hoped that they would like it. And the letter invited them to do a mission every day from then until Christmas, which would be a kind deed for someone else. And the kids absolutely loved it and jumped on board. And then a few days later, we were at Tyler's house, and he had a book sitting on his shelf that was a different elf. And the kids sat down and read that story, and they looked up at me suspiciously, and they said, "Well, Mom, what are these North Pole Ninjas? Where's their story?" And I kind of looked over their heads at Tyler and said, "You need to write it tonight. Write it right now."
Now, how old were your children at this time?
They were 5 and 6 at the time.
Oh, gosh.
Oh.
Well, it is a fabulous book. And, of course, the additional things that they can do, you know, are things that they can do, which is great. That's not things that things adults could do. Actually, I mean, it's a universal book. It really is.
Now, were the kids suspicious that you weren't able to produce this book right away?
No, actually, Tyler is such a talented writer that he wrote the story that night in a few minutes, and then we typed it up on an old typewriter and rolled it into a scroll and tucked it into their advent calendar the next morning.
Oh,
they were absolutely sold. They were ready to go. They had their, I made them little ninja mask hats, and they put those on and went to the food chair and dove behind bushes, and they were in.
Now, the book comes as a gift set with a little
ninja doll.
A little ninja doll.
And it's adorable. Just adorable.
And does he have a name?
That is Santa's Little Sensei. And I think what we like is we've noticed that everybody who has this book, they kind of give their sensei their own name. We've had everything from, I think our favorite is someone, a little girl at a last book signing said that she wanted to name it Yoda because of the big ears. And so we like that the families can kind of make their own tradition and name their little sensei anything that they like. So
he definitely has a Yoda look to me.
Yes, he does.
He does. He's very wise.
Well, I would, I think the idea that you had, not only to write this book, but to have these things that the children can do, or like I said, adults can do. I mean, for instance, number one was bring a bag of groceries to your local food bank to share food with those in need. I mean, everybody can do that. And I'm sure that children would get a really real pleasure of going to the grocery store and picking out some things, and then taking them to the food bank. So did your children do these things?
Yeah, my kids absolutely. That was one of their favorite missions, actually, in the very beginning.
Yeah,
they loved going to the grocery store and picking out things. And it was funny because I brought the list of the things that the food share was needing, and they, you know, we filled that list, and then they started adding little things like their favorite cookies or you know, their favorite little things. And then when we went to the food share, they were super sneaky, or tried to be, but they were these teeny little kids with these ninja mask elf hats, so they kind of stuck out. And they dove behind bushes, and the food share worker came out, and she said, "Oh, what are you guys doing? Can you come in? I want to show you something." So she brought them in and walked them through the entire food share and let them know how it works and why it was there, and it was incredible. It was a learning experience that I did not intend on, but it was incredible to see. I guess I didn't even really know all of the behind-the-scenes food share does, and it was great. So that was one of their favorites, and, you know, really pretty easy to do. Just even if you just can only bring a couple things, they're always needing some food.
There's a lot of food shares, of course, around the country, and they are desperately needed in many communities. And not only do they provide food, but they also provide toilet paper, paper towels, disposable diapers, because, you know, if you have a family with a baby, boy, do you ever need that. And they are so expensive.
Definitely.
Yeah. I like to take those because they're so expensive, and they're always glad to get them. So you need to remember that it isn't always food, but the food is very important too, of course. I know I live in Mount Pleasant, and ours is called the Fellowship Cup, and they have, they serve, I don't know how many people a month, how many families a month, but a lot of people. And it's really good. So how old are your children now?
They're 8 and 9 right now.
Are they still doing these things?
They are. In fact, their mission this morning was to sing a Christmas carol to someone at the top of their lungs so that the reindeer could hear. So that was at about 7 o'clock this morning. There was I want a hippopotamus for Christmas being sang very loudly in the kitchen.
Oh, good for them. So they're still having fun with this. That's great.
Definitely.
That is great.
And they end up adding their own things now too. You know, they make up their own missions, and it's really fun to see. And they even pass out missions to their friends at school, which is pretty fun, and ask to, you know, deliver a book to. There's a couple little kids in my daughter Adela's class that she really wanted to give the book to for Christmas, which is fun.
Yeah. How'd the kids react to having an actual picture book of this now? Was this exciting for them?
Yeah, and in fact, the illustrator is incredible. And she, when we first chose her and started working together with her, she asked to see photos of the inspiration behind the story and where we live. And we didn't really think anything of it, and I just sent over a few photos of Henry and Addie. And when we got the first pictures back, she drew the kids into the book. So those are my kids in the story, and I absolutely lost it. She nailed their personalities, even though she hasn't met them. And so when the kids saw that, they just couldn't believe it. And my son Henry, books are his favorite thing. And so the day that I got to sign the paperwork that said I was an author. I think it was the proudest he's ever been. It was pretty fun. So, yeah, the kids, you know, and now that all their friends are getting it, and we've gone into their school a couple times to do readings for different classes, and it's really fun to see how proud they are of us.
Oh, that is so cool. And so the kids, your kids actually can recognize themselves in the illustrations?
Absolutely. She nailed it. It looks just like them.
Okay.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it is. That's something that they, you know, they will cherish their whole lives.
Oh, definitely, absolutely. And so will I.
Yeah, you bet. Okay.
Well, should we share the story with our listeners?
Yes, absolutely.
So would you two like to read North Pole Ninja's Mission Christmas?
Sure, we'd love to. All right. There's a secret at the pole that not too many know. Long ago it was hidden deep beneath drifts of snow. We all know about the elves who work in Santa's shop. They stay busy all year round and hardly ever stop. There are elves who make the toys and those who feed the deer, some who sprinkle the cookies, one in the sleigh to steer. But there are some secret elves who are not often seen. They spend their Christmas giving in masks of red and green. These are the North Pole Ninjas. They live for Christmas Day. They are masters of helping, led by Santa's sensei. He's tiny, round, and quick, a beard right to his toes, teacher of the secrets, or so the story goes. And he is filled with magic, much more than it may seem. Santa is always thankful these elves are on his team. For it's these North Pole Ninjas who always do good deeds. They use their Christmas spirit to care for others' needs. These ninja elves are mighty when spreading their cheer around. With random acts of kindness, they never make a sound. It might not happen often to elves so filled with care, but sometimes this special team has some jobs it needs to share. Santa gave them permission to ask for help from you. Consider yourself chosen. Now you're a ninja too. So you must keep the secrets, for you are on their team. An honorary ninja, more magic than you seem. Stay hidden and stay quiet when shoveling that snow. Secretly you'll save Christmas, no footprints where you go. Now dig deep through your closets, find all that doesn't fit. Hats and coats, unworn sweaters, skates, or a baseball mitt. Then peek around your kitchen for treats you love to eat. Donate sardines, soups, and beans. Pack up the cans of meat. So when you get a mission, a job from your sensei, tuck them inside your pocket and then be on your way. Just know that Santa's grateful and needs these elves the most. He sees all the good you do. There's never need to boast. Now you're part of the secret. Prepare yourself to act. You and the North Pole Ninjas have made a Christmas pact. When Santa's bag is empty and reindeer start to soar, you'll stay a North Pole Ninja now and forevermore.
The end. And the illustrations really are so charming.
They are. Yeah. Well, it is a...
So tell us a little bit about how you went about finding an illustrator.
You know, that was actually the most surprising part for Sarah and I. We've never done anything like this before. And, you know, we've heard stories about the publishing world and how difficult it can be. And, you know, it's a big business. And so we were completely prepared as two people from Montana to just kind of get steamrolled and just have to say yes a lot. And we were completely wrong. Penguin Random House and the team at Grosset and Dunlap, they trusted us from the very beginning. And I mean, they made us feel like family. And so when it came time to pick an illustrator, I think we went through 18 artists that we said no. And I think both Sarah and I were afraid that they were eventually just going to call us and say, you know what, we're not doing this anymore. And on the 19th try, they sent us Piper, and immediately we knew that it was perfect. the way that she used the light, and we're both photographers too, and so, you know, chasing the light is a big deal for us, and the way that she was able to use light to convey warmth and a sense of space, and it was just, it was exactly what we hoped for, and I think we both wanted it to feel magic, and I think she kind of captured that perfectly.
I think you're right. Well, tell us how you found your publisher, because that's always an interesting story for...
It is. Right. I started writing poetry a really long time ago and sharing it, you know, just with my friends and family, and that's how it stayed for years and years. And then probably about 9 years ago, I started writing a haiku every day on the subject of love, and I just did it to challenge myself to see if I could wake up every morning and be creative. And to this day, I haven't missed a day in, I think, 9 years. Every single morning I do that. And
oh my gosh.
It's been a long ride. But so slowly that started building up a gradual kind of grassroots following on the internet, and people started showing interest in it. And then I started writing these typewriter series poems.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that, because I was looking at the Chasers of the Light, Poems from the Typewriter on Amazon, and there's an interesting backstory to that, isn't there?
It is, yeah. So writing for me has always just been kind of a pressure release, and that's literally all I ever used it for, and I never intended, like I said, on anyone other than my mom and dad and sisters and friends to actually read it. And then one day I was browsing around an antique store, and I found this really old 1927 Remington Rand typewriter. And just standing there in the store, I put an old piece of a book page in there, and I typed out what became the very first poem of that. And there was just something about writing with that immediacy, and without being able to edit it or change anything or move lines around like you can do on a computer, it just felt really liberating. And so, as I tend to do, I challenged myself that day to see if I could write a different typewriter poem every single day. And I think I can't remember what number I'm at now, but I just passed 1,700 and some odd days in a row of that as well.
Oh, my gosh.
Wait, so you do that and the other type as well? So you're writing two poems a day?
Yes, every day I do that. So it's a lot of creation, but it keeps me sane. And, yeah, so the following kind of just grew, and, you know, every now and then a random celebrity would share it, and then that would make it grow a little more, and then someone else would find it, and it would grow a little more, and literally that's what led to a lot of people requesting that I publish some kind of a book. And again, I had no idea where to begin and how to do it. And so I actually got referred to a literary agent, and she's amazing. Her name is Rachel, and she is in New York City. And she helped me put together the very first, I guess, kind of pitch idea for a book of this. And she just put it out there to a few different publishing companies. And I think three or four ended up kind of bidding against the idea. And when I saw that Penguin was in the mix, I've always just had this inherent love for Penguin and all the books that they publish. And so it was kind of a no-brainer for me. I was very lucky to find Penguin, and immediately they made me a part of the family. And so when it came time for the kids' book, it was immediate. I just said, well, we have to send it to Penguin first. Yeah. And we got very lucky, because I think within 24 hours of sending it over to them, Sarah and I were on a call with the president of Gross and Dunlap, and, you know, and the art director, and it just was a whirlwind that we never could have anticipated.
Well, Tyler, when I'm guessing that Penguin doesn't publish a lot of poetry books, so
no, I think it was definitely an experiment for them too. I've heard for years and years, especially when I was in high school and I wrote a lot of poetry, you know, I had English teachers and AP English professors that would say that publishing was the dirtiest, or I mean, that poetry was the dirtiest word in publishing, because no one ever wanted to take a chance on it. And so I think for myself and for Penguin, when we published that first book, I don't think anybody ever expected it to actually do anything. And it was just a testament to the people that had kind of very slowly started following me. Like I said, it was so grassroots that everybody that followed me, I feel like they felt like they knew me and they knew who I was. And so supporting me wasn't hard for them. It was something they were completely willing to do. And so, yeah, we never expected that little book to do what it did and what it's continuing to do. It's just been shocking. I mean, every time I look each week. It blows my mind that people are still buying it.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guests today are Tyler Knott Gregson and Sarah Linden, the authors of North Pole Ninjas, Mission Christmas. And we're talking right now with Tyler about his books of poetry. And I noticed that that the typewriter series, you also have a postcard book from that.
I do, yeah. The lovely people at Abrams Books, who is another publishing company I've loved for a long time, they do, one of my favorite directors, Wes Anderson, they do his books and calendars and stuff. And so they reached out after Chasers of the Light came out, and they had this wonderful idea to create these detachable postcards that, you know, for people who might not be able to find poetic words to say something to someone they care about, they can just, they can write a note on this and then rip it out and the poem's already done for them. And so they do such a beautiful job, and, you know, there's such attention to detail and care there that, again, it was a no-brainer, and it was something that I had to say yes to. And so they did the love notes, and then they also did a calendar for this year and for next year. And then there's another set of these cards coming out that I'm really excited for, actually, in February, that they're called Be Bold and Be Brave. And so they're cards that you can give to someone if they're feeling like they're having a lack of strength or courage, or if they're going through something hard. And so I think that might even be a time that people need reminders, you know, even more than love. They need just a little boost to remind themselves how special they are. So I'm excited to be working with them as well. It's been really easy and shockingly fun.
Well, Tyler, I noticed on Amazon that Chasers of the Light has 364 customer reviews and a very high rating. So it obviously struck a chord with people. Now,
yeah, it's like I said, they've just all been so supportive and wonderful. And I mean, it's a beautiful thing to see too, because poetry is such a personal thing that I think it hits a deep, deep place in people. And it's different than even a novel because it doesn't feel fictitious. And so it's been really nice, because when you meet people and when you're able to speak to people face to face, you see what it actually can be and can mean to them. And it just, you don't think of that when you're sitting, you know, alone in a room in the mountains of Montana typing out random little words. You don't think about that, so it's nice to see.
Now, I'm curious, you're both photographers. Do you combine photography with your with writing in any way?
I do, actually. So just to further complicate things for myself, there's actually three things that I try to create every single day. The first one, right when I wake up, is a photograph that I've taken, and then that is paired with a prose caption of some sort. And I always say that, for me, photography fills in all the gaps that I don't know how to write the words for, and then writing fills in all the gaps that it's just not possible to photograph. And so the two are very intrinsically married to me. And so, yeah, they kind of finish each other's sentences.
Wow. How about you, Sarah? What type of photography do you do?
Well, we have our photography company most of the time shoots weddings. And so we travel all over the world shooting people's best day, which is really fun. And when I'm just shooting for fun, just pictures of my kids.
Never get tired of that, do you?
No, never.
You know, getting back to poetry a minute, when I was in college back in the dawn of time, in the 50s, I wrote a piece once in poetry class that a poem should not mean but be. And my professor was not impressed at all, but I think I had read that somewhere, and to me it meant, it was very meaningful. So was I right or not?
I absolutely agree. One of the poems in my book actually says something about, because I've gone in and spoken to classrooms before, and it's kind of funny because for some reason the same question they all ask, and they always say, what is poetry? Like, what does poetry mean to you? And the only way I ever really figured out to explain it is, I said it's taking an ache and then making it sing. And I think that's the best and most concise way I can think to sum it up. It's, whether it's a good ache or a bad ache, it's just, poetry is an ache that's inside you, and you actually give it, you give it the words and you give it the lyrics to sing. And so that's what I've always tried to do.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler, another interesting thing about the typewriter series. I have one of those typewriters at home. I haven't used it in a long time, but it's still sitting up on the shelf. I believe it belonged either to my grandfather or maybe even further back than that. But and I when I started in business back in the 70s, the late 70s, that was my business typewriter to begin with, believe it or not. And it was probably
amazing.
50 years old then. But we were, you know, we had some rescheduling today, and originally what was scheduled for today's show was Sean Usher with Letters of Note. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
I'm not, no.
But, oh, it's this amazing, he has a website, Letters of Note, where he has collected all these letters from people famous and not famous from thousands of years ago to modern times that, you know, he says deserve a wider audience. And a lot of the letters in the book are letters that were banged out on those old typewriters. And there's something interesting about the lack of perfection.
Exactly. That's exactly what I love about it so much.
Yeah, because now with computers, you correct everything before it's ever printed out. There aren't smudges and typovers and handwritten things in because it's just too much trouble to go back and fix it.
Exactly. And I think the digital world has made everything too clean, and it's made it too easy to, I don't know, kind of ratify your own thought process. And for me, everything I write is more of like a snapshot in time of something that I was feeling at that exact moment. And when you type it on a typewriter, you can't go in a week later and decide, well, you know, I think this line would be better up here, and if I added this in here, it might be a better poem. Because that's not what poetry is for me. It's never been a pursuit that I want to try to get better at, or I want to try to become the best at, or compete, or anything like that. For me, it's the only way I know how to get everything inside my brain out of my brain, even if for 5 minutes. And so the typewriter was the perfect thing for that, because you're not able to change it, and it becomes almost like a little journal entry for that exact moment of time.
Now, do you use carbon paper?
I don't. I just use the old ribbon, and I actually use recycled old pages from books that are falling apart and books that bookstores are throwing away or Goodwill is getting rid of because they don't have covers and spines and all that stuff. I just use pages like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still buy ribbons? Can you still get ribbons?
You can, actually. There's a pretty... It's a trend that has kind of increased in popularity over the years, and Amazon sells some of them, and there's a lot of places that you can actually get your typewriter serviced and buy ribbons and buy everything. So it's kind of nice. There's definitely a comeback.
It's like the vinyl records are a comeback.
You know, I read one time that the QWERTY keyboard was designed originally to slow typists down, because if you type too fast, the keys would all jam up.
Yep, it definitely, I think that's accurate.
Yeah. You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guests today are Tyler Knott Gregson and Sarah Linden, the author of North Pole Ninja's Mission Christmas. Let's turn to talking a little bit about the missions.
Yes, yes.
So, Sarah, we have how many missions come with the book?
There are 50 missions in that little envelope with the contract on it. And we tried really hard to make sure there was a wide range of missions so that any family or a couple siblings or friends, whoever's completing the missions, wouldn't have a hard time doing it. And they could do it with not much time, not much money, not much preparation, or if they really wanted to get into it, they could make a whole day of it if they wanted to.
And are any of these some of the original missions that you wrote for your kids?
Yes, a lot of them are, actually. And that was one of the things when the first year that I did it, I remember kind of thinking, what did I get myself into? Because every night I would have to come up with a mission for the next morning, and I'd be so tired, and, you know, some days were really busy. And so I wanted to make sure that those were included in the book, because that was the hardest part for sure, and I wanted to make sure that families could do it even if they didn't have a whole lot of time.
Mm. I like number five is one of my favorites, sit and chat with a new friend at lunch, make them feel happy. You know, that's there's children in school that they think nobody likes them, they don't have any friends, and they're always alone, and those are the kids that need a friend.
And absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, Henry, my son, that was one of his first missions, and that the little boy that he ended up sitting with that day, they're now best friends. And
they know
how much they had in common until they sat down and started talking.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot that parents can do to encourage. I think kids naturally are kind, but sometimes if another child likes behavior, if their behavior is a little odd or different or they're dressed differently, a child may not know how to, you know, how to approach them. I just was reading an article that talked about like a child who'd been through a lot of trauma, and the teacher actually, and so they were a weird kid, but the teacher explained to the classmates why, and then the classmates were much kinder and the child was able to get over and not be as weird.
Exactly. You know, that mission in particular resonated for me too, because growing up, I went to school every year from kindergarten until high school with a kid named Adam, and he had Tourette syndrome. And so I don't know how it happened, but we were in the same class every single year, literally, for the entirety of our school. And it was funny because a lot of people who didn't know Adam would see, you know, his tics and some of his compulsions, and they wouldn't understand it, and they would make fun of him and tease him. But on the first day of every day of class, Adam was brave enough to get up in front of the whole class, and he would explain to everybody what he had and what it meant, and that it wasn't his fault, and it's not scary, and he's not going to do anything crazy. And it was funny because the kids that were lucky enough to be in his class saw that, and they understood Adam in such a different way that I think it really stuck with all of us. And that's something I carried with me through my entire life, is just because somebody does something different or out of the norm or something that you're not used to, there's a whole story behind that person. And if you just take a minute to listen and hear them out, you're going to see a whole different side that not everybody gets to see and that you might be really lucky to see. And so, yeah, number five has always been my favorite mission out of all.
Well, Mom, you picked the good mission.
I picked a good
one.
Yeah, I did.
Yes, she did.
Well, you know, there's so much so much talk about bullying now, and that's true. And but if you can stand up sometimes for somebody who's being bullied, it really makes you feel good.
Yeah, my son is now an adult with kids of his own, but he always would stand up for the kids that are bullied, but it ended up getting him in big trouble one time because he decided to teach a lesson to the kid who had broken this other kid's nose.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and they ended up in a fight, and he ended up suspended from school.
Oh, wow. But when I was in elementary school, my best friend and I, there was a school bully that would pick on absolutely everybody. And one day it was freezing cold and snowy, and my friend and I decided that we weren't going to take it anymore. And so I think we did the exact same thing, and we got in a lot of trouble. But secretly across the school, there were rumblings about how happy everybody was about bullying.
Well, you know, your brother, David, remember that one about the broken nose?
No.
Yeah, he was in he was in soccer, and this kid kept picking on this other boy all the time, and the coach told him to quit, and he wouldn't quit, and David asked him to stop, and he wouldn't, and David was a big kid.
Yeah.
So he clocked this kid
and broke his nose.
And so I had to hear about it from another mother. And because the coach didn't call us or anything, the school didn't call us. So I called the coach and I asked him, and he said, well, this kid had it coming. And so he said, David let him have it. And he said he had it coming. So I didn't say anything. So,
wow.
Yeah. Of course, we're not promoting the idea that violence is the best way to deal with bullies. But
no, but sometimes, you know, kids do sometimes. That's, you know, that's what they, that's how they handle it, which isn't, definitely, it isn't good, but
no,
that's the natural reaction, I guess.
Yeah. So, Sarah, what are some of your other favorite missions?
One of my favorites is to make a I don't have it right in front of me, but a blanket fort and crawl in and read a favorite story with a sibling or a friend. We did that one last week, I think, and a holiday card and mailing it to someone you miss who's far away. That's a really fun one, and it's amazing in this day of digital how fun it is to get a handmade card in the mail. That doesn't happen very often, and the kids absolutely love doing it. And one of my other favorites is just greet each new person you see with a smile all day. It's such an easy one, and kids, you know, if they get that mission and really take it seriously, it's so sweet to see all the smiles that they hand out and how that can turn someone's day around.
I got to tell you my experience at Hy-Vee. I'm looking at
which is a grocery chain here.
Yeah, I'm looking in this case for something, and a voice behind me said, "Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?" And I thought, "Oh, I wonder who that is." And I turned around. This darling little boy, 8 or 9 years old, was asking me that, and I said, "Yes, I did." And then, the grandma and me noticed that his shoelace was untied, and so I told him. He said, "Oh, it's okay." So he took off, and I met him up later at the pharmacy counter with his mother and his brother. And his brother admonished him for speaking to strangers. And the only thing I could think of was, I said, "It's okay, I'm a school teacher," which I was. I'm retired now. But but this little boy introduced me then to his mother and his brother. But he was just so sweet, and I thought, you know, I wish I had told him how much it meant to me.
Oh,
it really did.
Well, maybe he was a North Pole ninja.
Maybe he was.
Oh, I think he wasn't, even if he didn't know it.
Yeah, right.
North Pole ninja.
Right.
That is true. So this book, when was it published?
I think it just came out in September, so it hasn't. It's still an infant in the publishing world.
Yeah. Do you have plans to expand on it? Is there going to be more missions?
I think definitely. This is something that we hope is something people can do all year round, and so there are definitely ideas for how to do that, how to expand it. We have ideas for the website that we hope to really put into place and implement. So people everywhere can come on the website and you know, maybe even as simply as typing in your zip code, and it'll bring up a whole bunch of charities all around you that need help. And so we have very, very lofty goals for this thing. And then we also have about 7 other children's books that we've already written, and they're already ready to be illustrated, and line of things that we hope to accomplish. It's just, this is kind of the cornerstone of it all, and this is what's kicking us off into this world.
Well, you know, you mentioned about they were making Christmas cards or any cards to send. I remember once my kids made Christmas cards for my grandparents, or for my parents and my grandparents, their great-grandparents. And I mean, my grandmother was so tickled. She said, "You know, you could go out and buy a card, but they made our cards." And they were just, you know, it does. It does mean a lot. It really does.
And you're right. Kids love to do things like
that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they really do. Even kids who don't necessarily choose to color or do an art project on their own, as soon as they have a little mission, it's amazing. Like, my son Henry is not one who would just sit down and color. Adela would color all day long and never stop. But Henry doesn't really choose to do that. And when he gets missions like that, he gets so serious about it, and he will take his time and just absolutely loves it.
Yeah, great.
Well, let's talk about the sensei, Santa's sensei, the little stuffed toy. Was that originally part of the concept for the book, or how did the idea of including this toy with the book, how did that come about?
So the sensei was in the original story. To be honest, Sarah and I never even expected a book to come out of this. And so once they said yes to the book, they were actually unbelievably kind and welcoming, and they started throwing out ideas, and they started saying, "Well, what if this was a whole package that, you know, because you take that sensei, it says it in the story, you take him and you bring him with you, and it's a touchable and tangible element that you can have that almost can just serve as a reminder if you forget. It's something that you don't have to leave, and you know, you don't have to be afraid of touching it and carrying it. You can carry it with you, you can bring it with you, and it can be a daily reminder to complete your mission or to do more for your mission, or even just a reminder just to be kind. It's funny how much just having that little guy sitting out it kind of just reminds you. It's a visual reminder to do the right thing and to be kind. And so we were really lucky that they decided and they agreed with us that is something that could make this really special alongside the mission.
Wow. He is adorable. He
and
really is.
How did you design it? Design him? Or who designed him?
The drawings from Piper, the illustrator, came in first of the sensei, and the very first drawing that she did was absolutely perfect. She just nailed it. And so from the drawings, they started making the stuffed animal, and they were amazing they let us touch all the fabric samples, decide which ones would be the best, and we told them we just wanted to be a part of every little step if we could be, and they were great and let us do that.
Wow. Well, let's talk a little bit about how the process worked with the illustrator, because that's something I've always been curious about. I know that, like you said, when you're working with the publishing company, you know, people who are starting out writing children's books sometimes think that you should have a complete book fully illustrated and so forth before you send it to a publisher, but that's not really the way they work. Publishers do like to find the illustrator for the book. But then how did you work with the illustrator in deciding exactly what would be in each illustration? Where would the page breaks be and so forth? Were you part of that process?
We were in a lot of ways. I think Sarah and I's first step was, we are the worst illustrators and drawers there could ever be. And so we were actually in New York City for another reason. And once this all started going, we were sitting down in the lobby of our hotel. And I think we storyboarded out just kind of what we envisioned very, very loosely. And when we saw the pictures and the book in our head. And so that was all we really gave Piper. And she's based out of Montreal, so we never even had the pleasure of working in the same room with her. And so we sent her all of that stuff, and then just kind of on each page, we would very, very loosely give her, I don't know, kind of script ideas on what we thought might make the page look funny or cute. And we just sent that in, and then we didn't really hear anything back for quite a while, and then we got back samples. And I think, like Sarah said, we were just absolutely blown away. She took the little notes that we gave, did those perfectly, and then expanded on it in a way that we could have never even seen. And it, just the little details that made it so much richer.
Mm. And then, like, when you would get the picture, what she had done for each page, would you give feedback? Was there another step, or would you just, was it so perfect that was it?
You know, we didn't find a lot of times that we needed to give feedback, but Giuseppe, the art director for Grossen Dunlap, he's a magician, and he would see little things, ways that she could tweak something that we never would have thought of or even noticed, and as soon as she would tweak the little things that he suggested, it was amazing the difference that it made. So he definitely had a huge, huge part in it.
Can you remember an example of something like that?
I think everything from the way that light was portraying to the size of different things to the smiles on some of their faces to, I mean, as far as like even as little as if there were little dots on the reindeer's heads, he would see that and he would say, well, that looks a little bit distracting. It makes it look like another eye. Maybe try taking that out and using this instead. And
oh, wow.
We would do it, and then they would come back to us, and it was just, you're like, wow. Yeah, that's exactly right. And he knew that there were a few special little elements for us that we wanted in there. For example, one of our friends passed away from a brain tumor. And before he died, he started a skateboard company that was called Cutbird Skateboards. And so in the page that has, you know, all of the stuff spilling out of the closet, if you look really closely down on the floor, there is a skateboard with that logo on it in honor of our friend. And it was stuff like that Giuseppe was really conscious of making sure stayed in there and, you know, found ways to work it in that it was seamless. And it was just amazing to have that kind of an eye. And then one of my favorites, too, is on the page where Santa is looking at the giant list and stamping them with the NPN. In the foreground are Sarah's children and then my nieces and nephews, and their names have been stamped. And then spilling up the page are more names, and all of the names that are kind of extending onto the horizon are all names of people, of kids and nieces and nephews of people who actually worked on the book.
Oh, how sweet.
Oh, yeah. I wondered how you came up with those names.
Yeah, it was really fun. And my favorite page, besides the one with my kiddos on it, is the one where the ninja elves are parachuting into a sleepy little Christmas town. Piper surprised us and put in landmarks from our hometown, from Helena, and only people who, you know, live in Helena or have lived in Helena notice them, I'm sure, but it makes it so much more personal and magic for us.
Oh, wow.
The church steeples. And, yeah.
That is so cool that there's like so many layers to this. Now, let me ask you.
It's very onion-ish in its layers.
So Tyler, you say when you write the poems, the typewriter series, they're like once and done. Now, this you wrote in one evening. Did you make any edits or changes to the text later, or was
that? I did, actually. The first draft of this was much longer, probably too long. And so that was the very first step, and that was kind of the blueprint that we used to go forward. And as we worked and as we went forward, Sarah and I we did a lot of editing, a lot of switching around, a lot of moving stuff around, and we also used a lot of the feedback from the editor and the publisher at Grosset and Dunlap, things that they thought might go in different places and ways to, you know, be more call to action. And so it did go through some ratifications, but we still have laying around here somewhere the very first, much longer version. And so it was really fun to kind of whittle that down and make it a little bit more concise and make it something that could keep the attention of whoever's reading it without having them sit still for 20 minutes to hear it all.
And what age group is this geared towards?
You know, it's geared towards elementary age kids, although we keep saying that really it's for any age. We have a high school group in town, a cheerleading group, who are using some of the missions as a team and completing missions. And I know that my parents are a little bit older than elementary age, and they have been doing missions on their own as well. And our friends who have a newborn, they've been taking him along with them on missions. So I think it could be any age.
I think you're right.
I think
you're
right. Well, I do too. I think even a group of seniors, senior citizens could do this.
Now, how do the two of you work together? You know, do you have very kind of separate things that you contributed to the book, or do you do everything as a team?
We kind of do everything as a team. I don't know. We have a very strange working relationship where we've never had to communicate things. It's just kind of unspoken. And I think that might come from our partnership in photography. When you're shooting a wedding, you know, for everyone else, it's a very high stress situation. But Sarah and I have done it so much and it's so many times, and we have so much fun doing it that we know exactly where to be, exactly how to do it. And we don't ever even need to communicate. It's like we almost just orbit around each other in a way. And I think that same mentality and that same working relationship has spilled over into all of it. We don't need to really, there's not like a, it's not hard work. It's just we kind of tend to orbit each other, and everything kind of comes in and out of that orbit, and the good stuff stays and the bad stuff passes on.
Wow. You know, you're talking about your hometown, Helena, Montana, and Mom reminded me that her grandfather,
great-grandfather,
great-grandfather's brother moved to Helena in the 1800s and opened a law practice there. And his last name is Clements. I'm wondering if there's still any Clements's there.
I guarantee there is. That's amazing.
And not only that, but we have letters from him back to his brother. Yeah.
We always say that Helena is one degree of separation. If you don't know someone, you at least know someone who knows that person. I'm sure if we don't know a Clement, then someone we know does.
You know, I should, next time I'm looking through those letters, if I happen to find anywhere he's describing the town at all, would you like to have copies of them?
Oh, we would love that. That would be amazing.
And, you know, this is even predating typewriting. This is back when the letters were handwritten and in such beautiful handwriting. Everyone had beautiful handwriting.
Well, I personally am glad that there's typewriters now because I have the worst handwriting on the planet.
Well, I am very sad that schools are not teaching cursive anymore. I think it's a big mistake, and I'm really sad about that, but that's progress, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, my kid's little elementary school still is teaching cursive.
Oh,
really?
Good.
Yes. I'll have them write you a letter in cursive.
Okay, I would love that. Yeah, that's
so
great.
Tell us a little bit more. Mom has a Christmas thing she wants to read at the end, but so we're going to need to allow a little time for that. But while we have left, tell us a little bit more about the website and, you know, what you've got on there.
And how we get this book.
Yeah, the website is northpoleninjas.com. And right now we have on there places that people can find the book, as well as our little author bios. And I'm not sure if there's much else on there right now. It's kind of a work in progress. Like Tyler said, we have really high hopes for this website, and we'd really like to make it a searchable place to find local charities in the area. There's also our tour dates for our book signing events and a printable North Pole Ninjas mask that kids can color, cut out, and wear around if they would like to. So there are a few things, fun things on there, and there's also a little feed on the side that people can share how they're using North Pole Ninjas and their worlds with their kids, which is so fun to see. And we're asking people to use the hashtag North Pole Ninjas if they do use social media, because it's really fun to see this little book going all around the country. And we've had a few people from the Philippines even sending us photos.
Great.
Which has been amazing.
Oh, wow. And you do have some sample missions on here, it looks like. And I'm not seeing on the feed on the side. I'm not seeing too much there yet.
There's a section that says join the conversation.
Okay.
That kind of lets you scroll through it and see exactly what people right now are doing and using. And it's really cool to just see kids and adults and people all over the world these missions. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, so you have to scroll down. I didn't see the scroll thing. You know, I might suggest that you make that a little more obvious, because I didn't see that at first. But, here's someone. Our North Pole Ninjas are leaving thank you notes for school workers this week. Dear Miss Firstbrook, thank you for reading to us and for coming up with the idea of doing the Mickey Mouse project. I think that you are awesome.
Aww.
And here's, let's see, here's one. One of the Penguin Kids, North Pole Ninjas, left this on my desk. Thank you for the holiday cheer, Ninja, whoever you are. Here's a note that someone wrote. Eve, you bring your A game every day. Thanks from the North Pole Ninjas. I have no idea who left this on my chair at work, but it's just what I needed to hear today. Oh, this is adorable. Wow. This is so cute.
It really is. It's uplifting. That's what it is. And we, oh boy, do we need that right now. You know,
absolutely.
Our world needs uplifting, no doubt. There's so much going on, you know.
So North Pole Ninjas Mission Christmas, can order on Amazon. Is it at Barnes and Noble?
Yes, it is.
And probably at a lot of independent bookstores.
Yeah.
Which we always like to support whenever possible.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. So thank you so much for being with us today.
It has been
Tyler
wonderful.
And Sarah.
It really has. And I want
thank
them
for
to,
having us.
Yeah, I want you to hear this.
So stay on while Mom always closes with some words of wisdom, and she's going to read a little thing for us today.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much again for having us. We really appreciate it.
And this is a good book to give, actually a present to give before Christmas, too.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Even better.
Yeah, and we've even heard some parents saying that their plan is to give it as a Christmas gift and then start the missions in the new year, which is a great idea as
well.
It
is.
It is.
It is. Or you could save it for any time and start it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, this is, excuse me, from a book called The Glory of Christmas, inspirational writers from Charles Swindoll, Max Lucado, and Charles Colson. And this is, you guessed it, we need each other. Nobody is a whole chain. Each one is a link, but take away one and the chain is broken. Nobody is a whole team. Each one is a player, but take away one player and the game is forfeited. Nobody is a whole orchestra. Each one is a musician, but take away one musician and the symphony is incomplete. You guessed it, we need each other. You need someone and someone needs you. Isolated islands, we're not. To make things called life work, you got to lean and support and relate and respond and give and take and confess and forgive and reach out and embrace and release and rely. Since none of us is a whole and independent, self-sufficient, superb, capable, all-powerful hotshot, let's quit acting like we are. Life's lonely enough without our playing that silly role. The game's over. Let's link up. Charles Swindoll.
Oh,
wasn't that great?
And that's from a book called
Amazing.
The Glory of Christmas.
Yeah, The Glory of Christmas. I've had this book for a long time, and I just love it.
And once again, North Pole Ninjas, Mission Christmas, Tyler Knott Gregson and Sarah Linden. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it so much.
Also, check out writersvoices.com for past shows. And have a great day and a very Merry Christmas coming up very, very soon. And see you next week on Writers' Voices.